Welcome to another episode of Convergence. I am Ellen Taylor, alongside my friend Michelle McAloon, where we dive into issues of the day that we look through faith and culture. Hello, Michelle.
Hello, Ellen. I'm glad to be a deep diver with you.
Thank you. Well, it seems fitting down here on the Gulf Coast. Lots of things going on in the world. We say that every week when we come on because we can't possibly think things can get any crazier, and yet they do.
Oh, it is a wild ride these days. There's no question about it, from the church to the government to faux catastrophes. I mean, it's a wild ride.
Right. Well, we're going to bring in a guest today who's going to break that down for us. This idea of faux catastrophes, fake catastrophes. And I think we give him credit for coining this word as well. Our guest is Joseph K. Woodward. He's a PhD. He is an academic, a former journalist with the Calgary Herald, and a former federal tribunal judge. He lives in Calgary, Canada, and teaches the Great Books program online at the Angelicum Academy. Welcome in, Dr. Joe. How are you?
Dr. Joe.
Well, it saves you from having to pronounce Woodard.
Woodard. My producer, Mike, will tell you I can mess up most everyone's names.
Consonants are important. Yes. Right. Yeah, there you go.
Thanks for joining us today. You had this article that we found fascinating, and it was published in the Epoch Times. Our readers can go there and see it. And maybe you could dive into it for us. Photastrophes, the ecology of settled science. So let's start there. What do you mean by that?
A photastrophe, well, first off, settled science is the kind of drama or the kind of theater that validates a photastrophe, okay? A photastrophe is an invisible catastrophe that is our fault, okay? There are essentially five fundamentals to a photastrophe, right? The first fundamental is that it has to be our fault, right? It has to be something that we as natural human beings living our natural lives, raising our natural families, cooperating in a spontaneous manner with the people who live around us, something we're doing is causing a global catastrophe, right? But that global catastrophe is convincingly demonstrated in the form of a graphic line that shows an inevitable and unavoidable collision with some inevitable limit, right? So, for example, I mean, the classic photastrophe was Paul Ehrlich's, biologist, University of California biologist Paul Ehrlich's population bomb. Right, Paul Ehrlich had a population growth graph that showed the human race hitting an absolute limit in food production by the late 1970s. Mm-hmm. Right, and that was inevitable. It was unavoidable, and there was going to be all throughout the world, across the world, there was going to be mass starvation, all sorts of commodity shortages, and a general collapse of the international trade, because human beings have suddenly outstripped their ability to feed themselves, right? And it was simply wrong. I mean, he was simply wrong because he was taking a single number, you know, a single trend, extending the trend in a absolute fashion, in an absolute geometric fashion, and he was having that trend collide with an imaginary limit, okay? The funny thing is, but see, the reason my meditation over the last 30 years on photastrophes was I was sitting in a college, in a small West Virginia college in 1990, and I was watching Paul Ehrlich get an honorary doctorate degree, right? An honorary doctorate degree for predicting a catastrophe that was supposed to happen 15 years earlier, right? And in that 15 years since the supposed catastrophe, the world's population had become better fed, and all of the commodities, the world commodities had become cheaper globally, right? And everything had become, I mean, it was diametrically false and proven diametrically false. And yet he was still celebrated as the prophet of this photastrophe, right? So obviously it's the case, it didn't matter what reality was. It only mattered what the invisible disaster said was going to happen. But there are other, I mean, there are other issues, other fundamentals in a photastrophe. It has to be invisible, because an invisible disaster of any form, a visible calamity can be repaired, right?
So like a boogeyman, right?
Exactly.
But if you think of all this is invisible, I mean, how many, you know, climate change, I love that one. You talk about the most invisible, but then you use these non sequiturs to prove it. I mean, it's just crazy. It's crazy. You're right. Yeah.
So yeah. We've had a long history of producing these photastrophes, basically.
Does anybody remember the Ice Age was coming?
Oh, yes.
Do you want to remember that one?
Yep. Global cooling, yes, yeah. Global cooling.
Killer bees.
Throughout acid rain, you know.
That was a good one.
The thing about it, throughout the 70s, you know, the Ice Age was settled science. Right. Mm-hmm. Everybody knew we were going to collide with an ice age. Fortunately, at least on some children's science websites, teaching children science, we're now reassured that there won't be a new ice age because global warming has preempted it.
Saved ourselves, right?
Well, I mean, the weird thing is, okay, first off, what nobody knows about global warming is that the initial impetus for global warming, and this is classic political, bureaucratic, scientific corruption, right? The initial impulse for the global warming photastrophe was, and this hurts me to say it, it was Margaret Thatcher's government in the United Kingdom, okay? Because Maggie Thatcher wanted to free the United Kingdom from its dependency on Arab oil at that point, okay? So I can't remember the name of her science guy. You could easily find this out on the web. But the Prime Minister's science advisor went to the annual meeting of the British United Kingdom Meteorological Association, right, and said that there would be big research grants for anybody who could demonstrate that the use of oil was going to cause some sort of climate disaster.
You're bringing it home. These catastrophes only happen if they are money. If they're moneyed. If you look at the business that's been caused by, I hate to say it, by COVID, by climate control, I don't think the bees ever got any traction because they didn't really make any money for anybody, right?
The killer bees, we've pushed them aside.
Yeah, it was hard to imagine how you could actually generate an industry out of them. But I mean, nothing compares to, I mean, I think in the first 6 months of COVID, Pfizer raked in $6 billion. And as I can't remember the guy's name on the Dark Horse website, very good scientist on the Dark Horse website, repeatedly getting canceled by YouTube, right? But he's a very good scientist. If you look up the Dark Horse, you'll find it. As he said, the big pharma is causing trillions of dollars of damage in exchange for billions of dollars of profits, you know, and it's just pathetic. But I mean, in the long run, I think there's a lot more in this equation than simply politics, right? For one thing, I mean, I do think we have to realize that it's not really a conspiracy. I know that will bother a lot of people, but it's not really a conspiracy. It's a new religion. It's the religion of public administration.
Well, Joe, wait a second. Let's go back. What you're saying, and Ellen, I think you might agree with me on this. So here we are, and the reason why science has taken such a wild turn and has blown up so much is because we are now in a post-Christian era. Precisely. So a lot of things
there's no commitment no transcendent commitment to truth.
To truth. Mm-hmm. You know what? Bing, 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 bing. Don't you think that's true, Ellen?
I do. And it seems in all these stories when we've talked about faux-tastrophes in the past.
Is, there you go.
I know. I get it. By the end of the show, I'm really going to get it. Is that it's created an opportunity for those with power to exert even more power to press their will onward. And so it may or may not be mixed with science or something that we could justify to the common people, but it all really is packaged up in just many ways for certain people in certain positions to take more from the people that don't have, more of a dictate in their world. So all of these things go on, but it's really just kind of masking over a power grab.
Oh, okay. Absolutely. And it's power. It's about power in the end. Yeah.
It is about power, but again, I want to say it's not necessarily power to your elected officials, right? Because your elected officials have lost their control over the public administration, over the bureaucracy. So there's the political party that has, or the political wing that is understood to be in alliance with the public administration, right? Like the Center for Disease Control, the FDA, right? There's that party that is understood to be a docile lapdog for the public administration. And then there's that party that is maybe opposed to the or tries to exert control over the public administration, which party, incidentally, does not exist in most of the rest of the world, or most of the rest of the Western world, right? Because most of the political parties in the Western world have bought into the religion of public administration. Right. Mm-hmm. The religion of public administration has as its limitless purpose keeping us all safe. The only problem is keeping us all safe has very little or nothing to do with keeping you or me or Ellen safe. Mm-hmm. Right. It only has to do with keeping us safe. Right.
Like us in the collective. A collective rather than individual.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And public administration thinks in terms of tribes because they have to administer laws. And the only way you can administer laws is categorically, and as your legal administration or as your regulatory reach expands, the more and more you tend to divide people up into different tribes so that you can administer them. And it looks from the outside like divide and conquer, but from the inside, it's simply the logic of the religion that public administration, like the Aztec regime, will keep us all safe, even at the cost of, because the sun, look, if we don't engage in these human sacrifices, the sun might not rise tomorrow. Mm. I mean, you can imagine a Mayan astronomer going up before an Aztec general, and the Mayan astronomer says, "Yeah, we got that solar eclipse right. We were right on, bang on that solar eclipse." And the Aztec general says, "Well, might that not indicate that in order to make sure the sun rises tomorrow, we have to engage in, sort of lubricating the gears of the universe with human blood?" And, the astronomer says, "Well, yeah, that sounds like a reasonable conclusion." That's the precautionary principle.
Absolutely.
The precautionary principle says we have to prevent every conceivable catastrophe.
And that's interesting because that's a logical fallacy. It's a logical fallacy that when Aristotle came in, he taught us this fallacy. So it's really interesting. And you see this very operative right now, floods in Germany. Mm-hmm. Crazy floods in Germany. But you would not believe how many people have come out and said, this is this is environmentalism. I mean, it was only the Wall Street Journal today that had the temerity to say, Maybe not, folks. Maybe it was just a weather phenomena. And actually, maybe the U.S. government or maybe the European government should have reacted better, you know? So,
yeah. Well, I mean, the funny thing is, I mean, the news stories, which report the horrific, and I'm not saying 150 deaths aren't horrific, but in that same news story, they also have the reports that, incidentally, in 1962, there was 300 deaths just in the city of Hamburg from floods. And it's like, duh.
Well, we can't look back at history, Dr. Joe. I mean, they want us to forget everything we had in the past because I feel like the many ways are trying to spin a new narrative for the 21st century, too. So we've got to bring in bigger boogeyman, whether it's the climate or pandemic around the world. So I feel like they've taken the same playbook, but they've just adapted it for the times now.
Yeah.
What's the end game to all this? What is the end game?
Well, I mean, the possibility is, of course, that the parasite kills the host. Right. I mean, it may be the case. It may be the case that the here's what you have. The logic of bureaucracy says we must employ the precautionary principle to prevent all possible future disasters, all calamities.
Okay.
Part of the problem with that is that, first off, the alternative, the rational alternative is saying, no, we prevent the obvious, you know, the obvious immediate and local calamities. And then calamities are inevitable and they always come out of the dark. I mean, they always come out of, they're always X factor calamities, right? But we repair them, providing we have a vibrant, healthy industrial plant, we repair them as it happens. Like, for example, if global warming raises the sea level by 3 inches, we know how to make a 6-inch dike around most of our seacoast, and it wouldn't even be all that expensive, right? In general, what reason says is that it is a lot cheaper and a lot more sensible to repair disasters as they happen, where they happen, because all disasters are local disasters.
Right? True. Mm-hmm. True.
Okay. Yeah. But the precaution, the bureaucracy says, the logic of the bureaucracy says is we must prevent them in advance. So what that means is that we incur the cost, right? We incur the cost of all future disasters, right? Like, for example, we continue masking on into, 2030, just because, if it's not, even if everybody develops herd immunity to COVID, something's going to come down the pike at us. So, we better just keep social distancing and masking. But the thing is, the parasite in that sense could kill the host. I think the most likely alternative, largely in the States, is that people just get so fed up. At some point, somebody says, or many people say over and over again, the emperor has no clothes.
Mm-hmm. I think that's the only thing that it's going to take where we're not going to pay the taxes anymore, or we're just not going to listen anymore. And we saw that in France this past weekend. Millions protested Macron's decision to withhold food shopping from people who are not vaccinated. And they took the streets and said, we ain't doing it. And that is what it's going to take.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But it is funny, though, because you see, I mean, what's weird is I really do think that the culture is entirely up for grabs at this point, because you have this official narrative, right? And this official narrative is like a thin layer laid over top of most people's normal lives, right? And everybody I talk to, I mean, nobody I know knows anybody who's died of COVID. Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, and so you have this thin official narrative layer of photastrophe. Right. And but everybody we talk to the people who are wearing a mask while riding alone in their air conditioned BMWs. Right.
Yeah.
Or there's everybody else that's looking at these folks and saying, are they crazy?
Well, what happens?
Or are they virtue signaling? That's the other thing.
Oh, yeah, well, that's true, too.
What you also get is the development of a snitch culture where people start virtue signaling by wearing their mask while walking alone in a park, 30 yards from everybody else.
Well, right. Ellen, what are you saying?
I know. This week, and Dr. Joe, you being our Canadian neighbor, so they finally have said that we're opening the border between the United States and Canada that people have been waiting well over a year for. But now it comes with this, yes, only the vaccinated can come in. So
that's right.
It's almost right,
which is absolute insanity, of course, because the vaccine does not prevent you from contracting the disease. The so-called vaccine does not prevent you from transmitting the disease, right? And as far as the rest of society is concerned, the only thing the vaccine does is maybe increase the possibility that you're going to be an asymptomatic carrier.
It should be precisely
the people who are vaccinated that they don't let in, right?
Yeah.
Except the vaccine is the way they generate the database on everybody, and everybody who knows in our database becomes instantly more docile.
Well, yeah, and my sister's just bought a ticket because she's been waiting to get into Canada, and she's got to sign up into some sort of Canadian web portal with her vaccination card and all of her information, and I'm like, really?
Yeah.
Oh, no. Okay.
That's what you have to do in Germany.
Yeah.
Sign up. Got to be, and have your phone on. And I mean, it just.
It kind of goes against some of the American individualism of government. You're on a need to know basis that we kind of have. If I'm not doing any harm, if I'm living a good life, I'm paying my taxes, what does the government need to know this or this about me?
But okay. I don't understand why the political elites have bought into this. What do they get out of this? And that it really is the elites that with global warming and all this stuff.
Well, it is largely comfort. I mean, they basically there's a collusion between a hysterical mass media, right? A hysterical mainstream media, the public administration, and the elected officials who, if they do not behave themselves, will be punished by the hysterical media because the hysterical media exists in order to validate the growth. It's called progressivism. Right. It's 100 years old and progress is understood as the increasing public administration of all facets of life.
And it just gets wilder as we start to wrap things up here. Just the fifth thing you talk about, which I wanted to touch on before we leave, is that the fifth element or inevitability of this catastrophe is that it inflicts pain upon the common people. And that seems contrary to what it's attempting to do. But in the end, because of this chaos or misguided rules, we end up with the common people hurting.
Yeah. Well, basically what it is if you remember Stockholm syndrome, right? If we are being inflicted with pain or I just blanked out on the term. The term is cognitive dissonance. This is causing me so much pain that it must be true, right?
Yeah.
And see, because the catastrophe is invisible, right, they need or they think in terms, right? And this becomes quite explicit. We want compliance even for things we know to be absolutely useless, right? Because we're all in this together.
Interesting.
Dr. Joe Woodard, I loved your perspective, your narration, your stories of bringing this all together and just kind of opening our eyes that a lot of this is a catastrophe going on in our world. And we thank you for joining us today. That was really
a good conversation. Our pleasure. My pleasure. Let me just say it's Woodard.
If you go
to the Epoch Times website, epochtimes.com and just search Woodard.
You'll find it. Michelle, always good to get together with you to have these enlightening conversations.
Always.
For Michelle McAloon, I'm Ellen Taylor. Have a blessed day.